What I love is that while we're being creative, we're trying to start fires, right? We're trying to go around and spark little bits of creativity and encourage people to be creative themselves.
But also that's our role, isn't it? Our role is to facilitate the thing, to free up the maximum creative time and space for the young people.
If you say the real life fills up your days and you don't have time to play, well, midlife is the best time to start a new role playing phase.
Hello, rescuers. My name's Che Webster, and this is Roleplay Rescue, the podcast about rediscovering our lost roleplaying hobby. Today is the second of my summer holiday conversation episodes, and so I'm just going to dive in. This is Season 9, Episode 15, Trickster's Net with Barney and Tom. Today I'm joined by Barney Dicker and Tom Burmeister, who are here to talk about Trickster's Net, an internationally funded role-playing game design project they've created for young people in Wales and Germany. Barney is a game facilitator and designer and host of the Loco Ludus podcast. He's also a teacher, lecturer and arts researcher. Born in the UK, he has lived in Germany since 2016. Tom is a gaming and educational technology specialist based in South Wales. At Playframe, he uses cardboard, plastic, and virtual reality game technology for outreach, education, and more. To do this, Tom draws on his experience in 360 videography, photogrammetry, 3D modeling, VR development, educational support, student politics, youth workshops, and tabletop gaming. Crikey. Welcome to Roleplay Rescue, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yeah, cheers for having us.
So, what's Trickster's Net, and why have you created this project?
Okay, probably the best way to start, although there would be many, is that this year is Wales in Germany year, whatever that is. And that comes through the Arts Council, the Welsh Arts Council, Arts Council Wales. And a mutual friend of Tom and mine got in touch with me about this, and the deadline was really near. So Tom and I were put in touch, and we swiftly put an application together, and I started looking at funding in Germany, which had a comparably rapidly approaching deadline. And so out of kind of nowhere, in a few days, we put an application together for this collaborative exchange project between Germany and Wales. And that all worked out. Both funders, the Arts Council Wales and Kempton City, both went for it. We both got support from youth organisations in our areas, and we were off. So what is this project? We decided, I guess, as a response to the pandemic and both being involved in gaming with young people, that we wanted to create some project that had a real purpose. So it wasn't just a gaming group that would meet every so often. We wanted to have a direction. And that's where we came up with the idea for Trickster's Net. So over a series of, we've got multiple groups. So over a series of mini campaigns, if you like, and regular world building sessions, we're developing the concept, and at the end of it we're going to publish it online.
So Tom, what's the concept and stuff behind this then?
It's broadly based on a system that Barney came up with from his other system, which I think is he's publishing under League of Eternal Guardians. So there was already this game system that existed. Mm. And it was about trying to find a simple, approachable game system that we could hope that younger players, because we went for the age 16 to 21 in Germany, but 18 in Wales. We wanted to make it simple enough so that they could pick it up and learn to play very quickly, but also then take the reins as GMs very quickly. Because one of the one things that this comes off the back of is that mutual contact, Tom Goddard, who works for Crew Kelv, which is also an Arts Council funded project, which is all about after school art clubs. So that I had done several workshops for recently, doing basically GMing workshops, trying to get teenagers doing their first, like, what is role play, how to GM, how to do your first session, online tools, various ways that you can do it for free without spending any money, all the good stuff that I'm sure that you've covered in your podcast over the years and as everywhere. And so Tom's knew that I was in this kind of space, and then this idea he's been talking to Barney about for a long time, and then this funding came up to look for, it was actually Wales Arts International, which is an Arts Council funded thing. And it's a part of the International, Wales International Fund.
They don't make it easy.
It's so complicated. It's not complicated, but it's just, there's a lot of stakeholders. It's like, recently I wrote a blog and I had to like edit in like four extra brands at the end of the blog because I suddenly realized I hadn't mentioned all of the people who I really do need to thank for making the project the success that it has and enabling it to happen, right?
And I suppose, I mean, just to flip it over, to snatch it over from Tom for a moment, I mean, from my side, I've been working on my own systems and having a school group, a school gaming group. And when the pandemic and the lockdowns really started hitting, obviously it impacted that. And so I started thinking, all right, okay, what could I do with all of this? And so really all of these elements came together really, really neatly. And the package that we put together pays for Tom and I to facilitate sessions. It pays for us to have a couple of pro panels with advice on world building for the young people. It pays for an illustrator, Max Hartley, whose work is fantastic. And it's been really, really beneficial and wonderful to work with him. But also crucially, it includes a little bit of money that we can pay all of the young people something. So at the end, when we publish it, we've produced a professional publication, if you like, for the young people. So we wanted, that was the offer that we really wanted to create for the young people. And what is it? This Tricksters Net was an idea that just kind of popped into my head, really. And I was trying to, I thought, how could we run it so that there's enough flexibility for all the different types of players and ideas and settings that the young people might have. And so it's this kind of mishmash world which has kind of been spliced together.
Yeah, it enables there to be a lot of jumping from completely random settings and allows each player to bring in whatever ideas they might have. What's wonderful is that fortuitously, it just felt like it was suddenly on everyone, the multiverse stuff, partly because I think what Marvel's doing at the moment was suddenly quite in a lot of young people's minds because they were all following what was happening with things like Loki and stuff. So it's hilarious that we just kind of rid that wave, really. There was a lot of excitement with our young people about the idea of like jumping from completely different environments to other places. But it gave them the flexibility to really take the reins and become the GM, whatever they wanted to do. And also gave us that through line of cultural connection between the myths and legends that maybe they might have from the locations that they come from, which, you know, we're talking in two different countries here and two different cultures, but also maybe bring in their myths and legends like from their own personal experiences, from their childhoods. That's something that I was always interested in, like about the way that as kids we create these mythologies about our local, hyper-local areas. You know, the woods at the edge of the town will become the edge of civilization, and what goes on in those woods is that realm of imagination. And I think trying to encourage them to bring in stuff like that, but also bringing in more traditional mythology tropes or adventure tropes or you know, straight up just putting Loki in if you want. But we've had that. Mm-hmm. And it's been great to kind of foster that creativity and allow the system to do it. Because I think otherwise, when you're looking at something maybe, I mean, I love these games, but like when you come into something like Star Wars or D&D, there's a whole load of history to those worlds of feeling like, well, do you have the right to do what you like? We know, because we're adults and we've been playing for a long time, that of course you have the right to do whatever you like. If you want to do, a Benny Hill style Star Wars adventure, I mean, that's probably within
just off the top of your head.
then you can, but teenagers often have this weight of like, well, what, you know, oh, I've got to do it. What's the law? You know, what I've got to make it fit into the canon of the universe. And so if we were deliberately saying there is no canon, it's the multiverse, do what you like and teleport your players from one place to another between sessions or within a session, it gives them the freedom to really make GMing not the terrifying task I think it is for a lot of first GMs when they start as teenagers.
Sounds good. Now, let me see if I've got my head around this. Okay, so you've got a bunch of kids, 16 to 18 or 20-ish, something like that, and they're going to learn to GM, presumably for the first time.
Some for the first time, yeah.
Yeah, and they are invited to essentially write, using the game system that Barney's put out there as a sort of basis, to then put together some, what we're talking about, right, adventures?
The form that we came up with was that it was a seven-adventure experience. So the idea is that the group would go, me and Barney would GM the first two sessions, and then with a group of four, we would then get each member of the group to be the GM for a session. So that then we can do a session at the end to try and wrap it up. And ideally this becomes a single seven session campaign that they've done within this thing. That's the form. And we've managed to get about five groups together. We had funding for about eight, but we're pretty happy with the five that we've managed to get. It's kind of, because of the complexity, it has been a little bit hard to explain sometimes to get people on board. And also it's a little bit intimidating, again, for young people sometimes to come into this hobby completely fresh, or to come from, oh, I've watched lots of D&D online. I've watched loads and loads of these, of Critical Role. And I've been maybe following the broader hobby, but then you're going right into the weeds of what is a very rules light indie system that is heavy on improvisation and heavy on, hey, you don't really need to prep as a GM, just have an idea, write, roll a few tables and kind of improvise on it, which is, I think, maybe not what they thought necessarily role-playing would be in, but it can be many things, right?
I mean, just to throw something else in, the Germans, of course, are practicing their English, so they get to speak English, and they're doing a fabulous job with that. But like Tom was saying, the core of it are kind of random tables or adventure speeds. We are planning to include some adventures, but I suppose we're drawing on what gets thrown up in the sessions, the types of creatures, the types of locations, and those could be possible elements in this world. And again, I suppose we would want players who take it on to also follow this kind of patchwork, torn up, collaged world of the trickster too.
So it sounds like a big feature of this is going to be the young people themselves sort of taking turns. You've got a rotating GM thing going on as well. How's that panning out? How's that looking?
I would say that so far, like each group, quite predictively, I think we had one person who was chomping at the bit and raring to go. And like, that's great. Like we've got those. And then when they do it, and they do it either super successfully or they do it and they make a few mistakes, but it's okay in the end, that gives other people confidence within the group. Yeah. And so then we've done quite well with, I think, second GMs, you know, the next person in the group who stepped up. Mm-hmm. We are currently on our summer break and we're about to get our third and fourth GMs. We are at that crunch point where it's like, these are the ones who are going to be most nervous about taking on the role. But hopefully we've built up their confidence over the time. They've kind of realized that it's not the end of the world. It's somewhat just like keeping the game going, really, is the main thing you got to do. We're not asking them to do long sessions. It's only 2 hours. And so we really like two encounters at most, like have a setup and a bit in the middle, and then some kind of climax if you can. We given them almost the structure as well, or that's kind of built into the structure of the project, is that each session should end with basically the players trying to getting or failing to get a MacGuffin of some kind, like one of these tricksters items. And so that becomes the meta structure for the whole thing. It's like, I just need to get my players somewhere and then they get a thing at the end. And that just needs to happen in two encounters under 2 hours. And as long as you kind of keep it going, they seem to be doing quite well with it. But it is that it's interesting. Like, we're at that midpoint in the project now. So it'd be interesting to almost to talk about this in a few months' time, just to see how did it go by the end of it with full reflection.
We've also offered for perhaps some of the less confident ones that we could run them using their ideas.
Yeah.
And they're happy to chime in and say, no, not like that. so it's, you know, hopefully we haven't had to do that yet, but that's it's all there for them. And another thing to say is that just before the holiday break, we actually had the chance to run a couple of kind of open table sessions. So actually, over the couple of months that we've been doing it, the whole group has developed a much more, I think, a kind of more relaxed interaction that makes just saying that there's going to be a game on Thursday much more possible, and naturally you end up with a group.
Yeah, it is becoming more of a cohort. It feels like a class almost, in a way, which is really, really nice. I think you worry that you were going to get a lot of silent Zoom faces, or not even faces, you know, just like someone's name or logo on Discord and no one talking in these kind of big discussion groups. But it's not happened at all. We've been able to get like really fruitful discussion, really interesting ideas, and the actual game itself. The thing that we both really wanted to happen was that the discussion actually doesn't just result in world building, not to put that down or anything like that, but there's actual mechanics that have come out of these discussions, actual decisions about the way the game can be played, you know, feedback on discussions. Oh, initiative, I don't think initiative's working. Gosh, that was a long conversation, and it was good that we came up with like loads of different ideas about how initiative could be run, and getting the players excited, getting the what we call our junior creatives involved in the actual design of the game, I think has been really rewarding. And I think it will be super rewarding when they see it up there as a PDF that anyone can download on itch.io in three languages. You forgot to mention that, Ben, Barney. We're going to translate it to German and we'll translate it into Welsh.
Yeah.
I don't know how many examples there are of Welsh RPGs, but probably not many. So that'd be quite a coup, quite a win if we're that early on the store.
So the product at the end, I'm just trying to picture that a bit as well. So the clues I've got so far is we're going to have there's a game system there that's kind of based around what Barney's done, and the guys have they've been getting in the gaming and they perhaps tweaked things, changed things, made suggestions. So there are some mechanical things that may well be involved there. Then you've got the actual the games that they've played have generated various stuff, you know, that I imagine there'll be their creatures and things and places and all that kind of stuff. And you said earlier, Barney, that there was sort of random tables and all that sort of stuff that's been generated. So essentially, is this going to be like a toolkit kind of product where, you know, someone could grab that and then go and run with it and do their own thing?
Yeah, I guess that's... I like the word toolkit very much. Although I suppose we would want to say that if you pick it up, you would also feel that there's enough guidelines there to actually use it. You know, it's not here's just random tables. Go and get on with it. So, but it's deliberately designed not to be a big read. Not to be the you know, set in stone what the world is like, precisely because this world is always like almost like a Rubik's cube, almost. It's always moving around, and that's the action of the trickster's net, which is being dragged through the multiverse, if you like.
I think the idea is also that we'll have two documents, really. One that's a core kind of rules light. This is what you need to play the game, in the style of many like one or two page RPGs. I think Lasers and Feelings was one of your inspirations, wasn't it, Barney? But I was particularly taken by some of the more recent Blades hacks. So the Cyberpunk Blades hack, for example, is a wonderful like two page RPG with everything you need there to run it, if you're familiar with what the genre is, I suppose. But we're going to provide, you know, ideally something like that that's very simple that you can just play from that, but then there will be a lot of appendix, like appended extra information that will be examples of play and things that have happened in our other games. The reason why we're dividing up is probably more than anything translation costs. So we can be like the core documents, yeah, they're released in all three languages, but to be fair, all the appendices is likely to be produced in English. That's kind of where we're at, I think, with the final product.
And we also spoke with the junior creatives before the break about including some scenario ideas if they want, if they have some. And for example, we've got a games convention that happens here in Germany where I am. That's going to be face to face, and on the 18th of September. And we're taking over a room and we'll run three Trickster's Net sessions. So hopefully getting three of the German contributors to GM those. And the ideas that they bring to those games, they will have developed and discussed with the group as a whole in some way when we're back.
So it sounds like you've got about, what, 20 junior published, about to be published, game designers.
Yep.
Yes.
That sounds fun.
Make it sound like that. It sounds absolutely intimidating. Just like, how have we done that? Have we done that? But yeah. Yeah, hopefully it should really, it could be the beginnings of some really bright careers. Some of the people are incredibly creative, interesting. Well, they're all wonderful, actually. But yeah, I've been really impressed by the quality of people that we've got. Obviously, because we're dealing with, I don't think we've maybe got like one or two 15-year-olds. But the point is, we're being quite hot with like protection, you know, child protection and stuff, and making sure that we're not exploiting them or exposing them more than they should be. It's kind of hard to share about how wonderful these people are, but they are. I'm sure you know, like working education, it's kind of...
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, running a school game club myself, it's the one thing I can't do is talk about anybody or show any pictures of it. So, you know, I think a lot of listeners are like, does he really have a school game club? Because, you know.
I run a weekly tabletop club in Cardiff every week at a local games kind of store, Firestorm Games, and we play Warhammer and role playing games and on all kinds of stuff, and we have fantastic sessions there with loads of people playing, and I'm just like, I want to put this on Twitter, but I can't. It's kind of like, yeah.
So Barney's notes, which he emailed over to me beforehand, they include the word portals, which is a word that's close to my heart, it has to be said. If you listen to recent episodes, you'll know this. So come on, Barney, portals. What's that got to do with anything?
Okay, portals. Well, one thing is we created a short application for the young people to take part, mainly just to really get a sense of their engagement or their commitment for the project. And Tom actually came up with this. We asked them to describe a doorway, which of course chimes with what you were saying about portals in your episode the other day. And the whole premise of the game is that these seekers, which the players are, have been thrown through some kind of portal. They've been plucked from somewhere and thrown into this trickster's universe. And a way of managing the transition from GM to GM has been to use a portal to kind of leap onto a new location, so that nobody overly feels that they're inheriting what the previous GM has done. Yeah, so that has a mechanical face, but it also has a setting face. It's also something in the world that we have. And so that's, the portals have really been something that we've been encouraging them to, as an opportunity to completely turn things upside down.
Yeah, and also have it as a space for improvisation, like kind of have it in the back of their mind that the universe that they're with is close, you know, through the veils of reality to another one, and to have an idea in their head of what that other one might be, only because we have a system, not only because, but well, one of the reasons could be because using when they run out of balance points, the characters have to roll on, and one of those results is that the rift widens or something. And so the idea that suddenly the portal that might be off in a room somewhere becomes big enough that it completely swallows a house. And then that house is in a different type of dimension than the one than the players might be in. I think there's so many different ways that we've tried to, I think it's interesting using the word portal because when we think of portal, we often always think of the edges of it. It like a doorway is an obvious one with wooden doorways, but then you could have like a kind of a magical hole. I've always liked this idea, and I don't know, and it's something that I keep doing in my games when I talk about when they move from one reality to another, that it's almost like it's actually the type of portal from, now thinking about it, there is an example in Harry Potter with the wall in the train station that you just go through. But I also think of it like when a character bugs out in a video game and just drops through the level. Mm-hmm. And then like, I always imagine, what if you ended up somewhere else? Like, what if you ended up in a different world from the one that you were just in? I also think of the kind of portal or the way of transportating where you move out of reality. There's a term that was in Ian M. Banks books, rest in peace Ian M. Banks, but when the peoples of the galaxy sublimed, where they became effectively gods, and they kind of, and the term he used was sidestepping out of reality. And I always just love that. It's like you turn an extra corner that's not there, and then suddenly you're not in the same reality you were before. And it, you know, it's that portals without edges, if you know what I mean. So,
and that makes me think that portals give you almost like an edit or a cut, which allows you to disrupt the setting. So everything that's been established that thus far can now be radically changed or not, or undermined or flipped or whatever. But still, the portal itself provides a continuity, and that Tom and I think both really respond to that call to creativity.
Yeah, being able to use like editing techniques like that to push your story forward is definitely something I have never done it, because I do a lot of Star Wars role play, or I did used to. I haven't done so much recently, but I always wanted to do the cutaway to the bad guys. You know, the camera like side swipes or iris closes, and then you come back somewhere else, but it's just a kind of a scene with the bad guys talking about what's going on.
But that would be just you talking to yourself, wouldn't it?
It would be, yeah, which I'm fine with, but I don't know if my players would enjoy it.
Oh, and I once sat in a game. I went to a con game in the United States of America about 15 years or more ago, and a guy did this thing. He said, like, hey, you're gonna play his characters, and then there was a scene where he did a cutscene and he gave us all these sheets. And there were just the notes, you know, like who you were, and it was the bad guys, and we were, and the brief was, you know, we were reporting back to the big boss about what had been going on. And so those characters had interactions with our player characters, you know, some of them had come off badly, and they were reporting back, and we had to do that in character, and that was hilarious. Actually,
that's a brilliant idea. I'm stealing that.
But it worked because it was brief. You had I think what the guy did is he had an image and then some brief notes, and then he just said, okay, tell us what happened, you know, and it was great. So yeah, that can work.
Okay,
all good fun. Right, so. Yeah, it sounds like you two have just become professional GMs. Or is that not a just?
Well, I mean, I would say not a just, only because I've been charging for GM sessions with kids, you know, because it's part of the kids club kind of situation for a long time now. Mm. But it's always been like adjacent to the broader thing of providing a activity group after school in a location. It is that. I think it makes a big difference when it's your own system we're actually, you know, it's part of a broader project and it's wonderful to get funding. And what I will say is that off the back of a little bit of shouting about this with some blogs and Twitter posts, you know, I've already got, both me and Barney have had other arts kind of groups sniffing around us going, oh, you're doing stuff with this. We heard about this. This is great. So I think there's a lot of scope there to get funding. I think it's a different model than the kids club thing, which is what paying, you know, that's the kids, obviously professional GMs, which I haven't done, which is the adult professional GMing, which I know a lot of people do. They charge per session with their members and they get, you know.
Because it's a sticky topic, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the community, professional GMing. And there are these two aspects, aren't there, where we all want to have more of our lifetime and energy invested meaningfully in gaming, right? But there seems to be this kind of holy idea that your game group is totally voluntary and everyone's just there, you know, as a free time activity. So I think with TricksterNet, like Tom said, by getting the funding for it as an arts project and working on it as an arts project, we're not directly asking anybody, you know, the young people for money, and we're not doing stag do's or anything.
not that I'm against doing that. I'm trying to come up with like a Bridgerton themed RPG to do hen nights, because I think there's a market there and I think that would be great fun.
I think the other thing I wanted to chip in on here is that the young people themselves are getting paid a small fee to come and get involved in this project, which is kind of intriguing. How did that idea kind of work up?
Well, I would credit that to Tom Goddard, again, our mutual friend. Mm. He said, pay the young people. I always want them to get paid. Always want them to get paid.
I think in the current atmosphere, there's so much discussion online, isn't there, about, you know, dying by exposure or people working for free and young people being exploited and their creativity being exploited. I think it's so key to feeling like you're in the right place. The right side of history with those kind of discussions, that we're not making money from it in terms of like we're not putting a product out there with their creativity in and charging for it, but also we're giving them something for it as well. We're giving them a credit and they're getting, you know, a small financial reward, which I think it wouldn't feel moral otherwise. Because, you know, let's be frank, me and Barney are gaining from this as well. We're gaining, you know, notoriety. We've been invited onto your podcasts. We've got people who are talking to us about this project because we've gone and done it. So we're getting benefits outside of, you know, that inevitably do turn into money. Let's not be coy about it, because I think it's important that we do talk about money, because sadly we live in a society where we need to eat.
I don't know what it is, we do seem to have this kind of, it feels a bit grubby to talk about money when it comes to things that are about, you know, leisure time and entertainment, and yet the leisure time and entertainment industries are huge. You know, the biggest industry in the world is arguably computer games, right? Leisure and entertainment. And the creativity that goes into those things is enormous. Now, I'm not going to, you know, do a direct comparison here, but what I'm saying is when people are feeding their creativity into like entertainment and, you know, working to, you know, for this grand goal of like creating something and bringing it to life, making somebody's life more interesting and exciting, why the hell not pay them their due? You know, I think when I sit down with my mates and we play a game, that's one thing. But if, you know, if someone wants, you know, me to come and GM them, I can't imagine why they want that. But if they did, you know, why is it such a bad thing to say, you know, yeah, fine, can you pay me for our time, please?
For me, in thinking more about what I can do gaming-wise, work-wise, I keep coming back to the thought that it's about that what I'd like to be paid for is my time. I'm not so much expecting to score some huge hit with something, but that actually, you know, just to follow on from what you're saying there, Che, that I can give my time. I've got a certain amount of time I can give, and I would like to give it in the direction of gaming. And so this project has been just wonderful in doing that in a healthy way.
I think that's a really good thing to pick up on as well. I think young people I work with, for example, often aren't aware of how time is the most valuable commodity they have. You know, the average human being lives for 4,000 weeks. Stark though that is. You know, when they get up on a Monday morning, they think, oh, I can't be bothered to go. Don't want to go to school in the morning. No, I always remind them that's one of your 4,000 Mondays. What are you going to do with it today? You know, and then when you get to do something that's creative and you enjoy and share that with other people, which, you know, let's be honest, creativity is essentially a generous act. You know, it's there about giving to others. Then that's a glorious thing to encourage, surely.
What I love is that while we're being creative, we're trying to start fires, right? We're trying to go around and spark little bits of creativity and encourage people to be creative themselves. Like, you know, my own creativity in this project has been probably more involved in some of the stuff outside of the actual gaming, like whether it's writing blogs, applications, or podcasts, or talking to people about it, has probably been, I've probably put more work into all of that than I have actually planning or running the actual sessions, because that's almost second nature. That's that just comes quite easily now. Once I gropped Barney's system, anyway, had to watch him do it first. Once I was like, right, okay, I understand this now. It's that kind of way of learning.
But also, that's our role, isn't it? Our role is to facilitate the thing to free up the maximum creative time and space for the young people.
Mm. Yeah.
And it sounds like you've also, I mean, picking up on an earlier point, it's really important for you to give them permission to do this as well. It sounded like at the start they were a little bit reticent, you know, are we allowed to do this? What can we do with this? Are we allowed to tweak that? Can we change this? You know, was that, an important thing? And have you noticed that switch of them accepting that they can do this, actually?
I think we've got such a range of different people. We have some people, say in Germany, who don't always feel confident with their English, who have improved their confidence massively by playing and GMing. We've got people who are experienced in role-play gaming, but might be more used to the kind of hardline D&D approach. And some of them might have found that a bit different to begin with, but now they're freed up. They've freed themselves up in there. We've also got lots of aspiring visual artists, and sometimes they're they're drawing their characters and posting them up. So I guess from the outset we wanted them to have that permission. Of course, it takes time for it for everyone to get into the rhythm of it, but we really wanted it to feel like they have that permission from the word go.
I think as an educator, this is fascinating to me, because one of the things that just speaking honestly here, if you're going to high school, I'm a high school teacher, right? So kids going to high school, a lot of the time, they're pretty disengaged. And if you think about what goes on in school, you know, how much of the day, if they're in there 6 hours a day, how many minutes in that time are they spending actually, you know, solving problems and getting to tackle things? And it sounds to me like this project, what it's done is it's taken a bunch of kids and said, hey, here's a problem. You know, if you like, here's something to go and solve. You know, how, go and run a game, go and give somebody an experience, you know, for a couple of hours, online gaming, and it's kind of up to you what that's going to be like. And I don't know how many really young people these days get that kind of opportunity to sit down, to work out an idea and then to test it out, to experiment with it. I mean, I don't know what you make of that, but that to me strikes me as a really fantastic opportunity for young people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great summary of that aspect of it. And I think structurally, having the games and then the world building sessions have allowed us to kind of have an ongoing session zero creative process, but also a reflective process, and to have the time to game unencumbered by those kind of session zero or rules debate questions. So that's worked really nicely to have those two aspects, the games and the workshops.
And a space constantly to kind of knock down the GM screen and say, like, look, this is what I did. Look, this is what I did. This is my one page of notes. I ran that whole adventure off this one page of notes. Like, it, and look at that, half of that's blank space. Like that's, you know, it's constantly having those kind of learning, that kind of, oh, right, okay. So you just came up with that. And it was like, well, yeah, but I fed off what you said there. And I thought, let's run with that. It's very hard to teach improvisation in that respect, but only by constantly doing it and kind of showing you're working, I think. Oh, ironically, not working because you're improvising, but you know what I mean?
I think it is amazing, isn't it, when people, you know, you've run through a session and then you're confronted with the idea that actually somebody had a few scribbled bullet points on a piece of paper and the rest of it spun out of the group. Because that's the real passionate, amazing thing about role-playing games.
Yeah, absolutely. And we totally wanted to lead them towards that responsive, improvisational way of playing, rather than the kind of tome-consuming...
rules lawyering. No, keeping the rules lawyering to a minimum. Although I did create a rules court on our world.
You did, Tom.
So I could put Barney in the dock and tell him off for like not making damage two rather than one. Or I'm joking. Those were taken in the jest. But
so what have you two learned from all this then? Ooh. I mean, you're halfway through it, aren't you? So what have you learned?
Well, okay. First thing, you know, Tom and I haven't ever met in person. We've never worked together before, but we make a really good collaborative team. Our skills complement each other, and the common ground is really good. And I think we both have, in different ways, good rapport with the young people. So I don't know if I've learned anything, but I've learned about another person who I can work on projects with.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say, Barney. I enjoy working with you too. And I think that you are right that while we do share a lot of common attitudes towards things like education, towards young people and a lot of gaming, we also have really different like histories with gaming and kind of perspectives on it. I've come in pretty much with the golden age of board gaming, right? I came in with Shut Up and Sit Down and when all of the... Basically, when video games journalists all went, hey, there's all this cardboard over here, and they all went over to that, I came with them. And that's how I got into the whole tabletop renaissance, really. Apart from some early flirting with Warhammer when I was like a really young kid, but that was the older brother's thing, so I didn't do that. That's what I thought. But so to come at it, I'm a kind of a new kid on the scene. I don't have any of those old books with those times in the early 2000s and the 90s where people were playing Call of Cthulhu or all the older Grogard stuff. I've come in with Fantasy Flight Games and Fifth Edition, which is still, for me, a relatively new thing to have learned. But that's a great perspective compared to Barnaby, who I think's got a lot more storied kind of history with the genre.
And you always credit me with that, but I don't know. I mean maybe
it's funny because my adult tabletop group is much similar to Barney's kind of history with the gaming, where they've been playing Cthulhu and Rogue Trader and the Warhammer fantasy role play games kind of stuff all the way through the histories of role play. And it's so interesting to be working with that perspective in something that's brand new, you know, using all the modern stuff we can when it comes to video conferencing and virtual tabletops, although we haven't used that really for this project yet. Because I don't know, I've done a lot of that in lockdown with my kids group. So keeping keeping the fire going with my weekly tabletop group by forcing it all online. And that the easiest thing to do there was to get a Roll20 subscription and just keep playing role-playing.
So, Tom, does that mean that you've learnt with Tricksters.net that you don't need to use Roll20?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I already knew that, but like I have learned
it's proved it.
I don't like maps anymore. No, I do like maps. I love maps, and I don't like maps. I can't tell. I'm really conflicted feelings about maps. That's what I've decided. I think I really like big high maps where it's like the island that you're on. But as soon as you're in a dungeon, I think, or like a room, we shouldn't be using maps. It's kind of, it's kind of crystallized some of my role-playing ideology, which I'm sure will shift again as time moves on. But I think the big thing, though, that I learned, big thing, is there's appetite out there for this stuff. There's appetite out there, not only from the young people who want to be part of it and all kinds of people who want to be part of projects like this, but also there's appetite for funders and having the ability to really go to these arts, you know, all these arts councils that we have. There's money out there to find for these types of projects. And it's not impossible with the right kind of connections and stakeholders to
and the right kind of project, you know. That's also a key thing. It needs to fit the different briefs and the different participants. I was going to say, I think the thing I've learned is similar to what Tom just said. I did not start this year thinking that at this time now I would be doing this project. So it's been a wonderful surprise, and pretty much the plan that we came up with for running it has worked, and it's even indicated different ways that you could run it. And I think we've so as a kind of control test, you know, I think we can see ways that we could alter it for different time frames, different settings. So it's, yeah, there's lots of interesting stuff.
I wanted to finish just by asking, I've got a bunch of people possibly listening to this podcast, what might they take away? What might they be able to do? What might their involvement be?
I suppose the first thing would be that when we've published it, end of October, November, maybe somewhere like that, that they get on Itch and download it. It's going to be free. So not only that they download it and try it, but that maybe they contact us and give us a little bit of feedback. That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great place to. That's pretty much the main thing that we will. One of the metrics that we will get on measuring the success of this, but also just keep an eye out for it as a future project. I suspect it might be something that we repeat or we do a follow-up project. So that might be happening, and there might be an opportunity to get involved in that if it's appropriate for your kind of demographic, if we're doing something with older people potentially or younger people.
I suppose it maybe just makes people feel a bit more inspired that some project or possibility that they can see where they are might also work, and it would be worth putting that application in and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating to hear about teenage kids, you know, students getting involved in this creative project and becoming kind of, you know, well, not kind of, game designers and learning together. That is a really interesting, you know, thing. I think that perhaps often is below the radar because it's the after school club or it's the coffee shop game shop kind of group that's going on, and it's a bit invisible to most of us. And what you're doing here sounds like a wonderful way of kind of bringing it up and saying, hey, there's some people doing, you know, really great stuff, young people here doing really, really great creative stuff. Have you noticed? Did you know?
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's just providing a venue for design. I think a lot of people, I mean, we don't think the same way as we did in the 90s, where video games just came from the moon or something. You just didn't know where they arrived, right? We know a lot more now about, you know, development processes and studios, but it all seems very locked up in big corporate things. And, well, the tabletop sphere is much more open than that. Like, you can come up with a design, meet up at your board game group, and you might learn some tips about how to pitch that board game at a convention to a publisher, and that might actually happen. You could never do that with a video game, but you can do that with cardboard. With role-playing game, it's even more open. Just come up with some rules and like play it with your friends, and if they've got some graphic design skill, put it online somewhere so that people can download and play. And it could become popular, it could not, but it's got value in itself as an activity to do and will just make you a better and more competent player and just get more design under your belt if it is something you want to do as a career, or it's just something that you enjoy doing, like painting miniatures or whatever. Like, you know, it can be, you know, creativity is an end in itself.
So, Barney, Tom, thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for coming on the show. Any last words?
Oh, thank you very much for having us. And once again, if people would like to take a look at TricksterNet when it's out, please, please do.
I'll stick the stuff in the show notes.
And yeah, you can follow us on Twitter, I suppose. I'm at PlayFrameUK.
And I'm Loco_Ludus.
Yes. But yeah, we do tweet about TricksterNet stuff on there, as well as other interesting projects we might be doing.
We've decided that 2021 is the year of the trickster.
All right. Thanks very much, guys. Great to speak to you. And well, catch up with you soon.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jay.
And that's it. That's the second of my summer holiday conversations. A big thank you to Barney Dicker from Loco Ludus and Tom Burmeister from Playframe in talking to us about TricksterNet. If you want to grab details of the product, I've stuck links to the TricksterNet website in the show notes, and I'll also stick links to Barney and Tom's other stuff out there for you to check out. If you have questions or comments, please, as ever, feel free to drop me a message via anchor.fm/rpgrescue or email your sound recording directly to hello@rpgrescue.com. And I'll be back next weekend, hopefully with a third interesting conversation had during the holidays. Thank you for listening. My name is Che Webster. This is Roleplay Rescue. Game on.